PC. Perpetually complicated, profusely corded, physically conspicuous, particularly costly. Oh, and then there's the new iMac, which is about as un-PC as you can get.
Hello, and welcome to the Cultcast, the best 30-plus-minute conversation you're going to hear all week long. I'm your host, Erfan Elijah. Joining me today, what a special treat. He's host of the MacCast, an Apple podcast full of depth, facts, useful information. You know, all the stuff that we generally try to avoid on this show. Adam Christensen is here.
Hey, how you doing?
Welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me back.
It's weird to start the show like this when we've already been talking for 20 minutes, right?
Well, that's how all podcasts are, right? That's what people don't... Well, people probably realize we have these conversations before the show even starts.
It's common. We talk about everything and then we actually do the show because we realize we've been talking for 45 minutes. It's really great to have you back. I don't know the last time you were on. I probably could search old show notes, but it's been a long time and you're always such a fun guest to have on because, as I said, you've got so much information, so many facts, so much stuff that we generally try to not include in this show. So it's nice to work it in with you.
You always say that, but I know your technique and your show notes and stuff too. You cover plenty of facts over there.
I have a maximum of 3 facts per show. That's it. And the rest of the show has to be absolutely
totally made
tangential.
Up.
Yeah, totally made up. Actually, funny enough, I think probably more than this show, and I like to admit, is probably completely made up.
Well, isn't most of the Apple news made up until actually we have an event?
I don't even think Apple knows what's going to happen necessarily sometimes because they have these contingency plans in place. Right. And so until they have all their manufacturing stuff locked in stone and they're actually making phones, I don't even know if they know what's going on. But speaking of covering facts that we're not sure are actual facts, we're going to do some of that this show. We've got... We'll tell you everything that we know or think we know about the next version of the Apple Watch. I know it's something that we haven't talked about in a long time, and I'd say only half the audience is actually interested in the Apple Watch, and I would say I'm on the fence. Sometimes I'm interested in it, and sometimes I just take it off, and I put it away, and I think that I'm never going to wear it again because I just don't think it's a useful device. So, but we'll talk about the improvements that may be coming up. We're going to talk a little bit more about some of the iPhone 8 features that might make it into the phone, including one specific feature that I've talked about on past shows about how the iPhone will recognize your face even when it's laying down on the table to unlock itself, which I think is extremely useful. And we'll do a little bit of discussion on 4K Apple TV. And actually, I wanted to just get your thoughts on 4K in general.
Okay.
We're going to talk about AR kit updates. We'll give you some more examples of some really cool stuff that Apple is allowing developers to do with AR kit. And we're going to wrap up with a whole new What We're Into, the segment where we talk about the things that we can't normally work into the show, you know, the stuff that's not necessarily tech related. And I think, Adam, on a past show, if I remember correctly, didn't you pitch like that Cinderella show on television?
Probably did. You're gonna bring that up after this much time. Yeah, once upon a time.
I was just shaking my head at the special effects, and then you brought it up.
We all have to have our sort of pleasures. Junk food that we like, and yeah, that was one.
What was the name of that show?
It's Once Upon a Time.
Once Upon a Time. Thanks. Are you still watching it?
When the new seasons show up on Netflix, yeah. But I'm kind of into other stuff right now. I'm all tied up with the latest season of Mr. Robot that showed up on Amazon.
Right now. I haven't even started watching that yet.
So. Oh, I could give you some really good stuff. Maybe that'll be one of my picks. Not Mr. Robot, but a different one.
Sure, you can if you want to pitch a few shows for what you're into. That would be totally fine. So before we hop into Apple's plans for the Apple Watch, let me take a moment to say thank you to Eero for supporting this episode. Do you have dead spots in your house? You have a hard time connecting to the Wi-Fi from your bathroom, maybe? Well, what you need is a distributed system like the Eero. And as Leander said when he was doing his review of the Eero, it's one of the best systems out there. Whatever your Wi-Fi needs, Eero has the power to seamlessly blanket your home in fast, reliable Wi-Fi via Ethernet, wireless, or any combination thereof. Simply set it on a flat surface or plug it into a wall outlet to expand coverage to any room. Not to mention, with the addition of a third 5 GHz radio, the second generation Eero is now tri-band and twice as fast as its predecessor, which will let you do more in every room of your home simultaneously. And with the addition of a new Thread radio, Eero can now connect to low-power devices like locks, doorbells, etc., etc. Meanwhile, Eero Beacon is half the size, but even more powerful than the original Eero. Whichever model you choose, with Eero's incredible customer support, you can call and get a hold of a Wi-Fi expert within 30 seconds if you need to, but I don't think you'll need to. This thing is super easy to set up. It's powerful. It's easy to expand to cover dead spots in your home. And I think mesh routers are the future. They're incredibly powerful. They're way faster. And if you're still dealing with an Apple Airport Express, do what I did. Replace your router. I was stuck to that thing. I was glued to it. I thought I would never replace it. But I'm telling you, Wi-Fi technology has gotten so much better in the last 5 or 6 years. You could do much better than an Apple Airport at this point. So if you are tired of dead spots, if you want to improve the speed of your network, do this. Head on over to Eero.com. Check out what they have to offer. If you decide to place an order, you can get free overnight shipping using code CULTCAST at checkout. That's Eero.com, E-E-R-O, Eero.com. And use code CULTCAST at checkout to get free overnight shipping on your order. Okay, Adam.
Yeah.
Do you wear an Apple Watch?
I do.
How do you like it?
I love it. It's actually, I have the second generation Series 2 that I upgraded to. So
was that worth the price?
It was worth the upgrade for me because I had I'm one of these people that is incredibly hard on my watches, and so I had originally gotten got the 38 millimeter sport edition
in the
Series 0. Well, I didn't know if I was really going to like an Apple Watch or not, so I was just going for budget. And I loved the Apple Watch. I loved the features, and I was excited about the new ones. But the one thing that I was, the problem I had was I was super hard on the display.
What are you doing? Are you going to work in the yard and moving
concrete block or, you know, retaining wall block around or whatever, and just, you know, just scratched the heck out of the face of it. So I wanted something a little more durable. So I went with the next level up.
The speed increase you got, was it noticeable?
That didn't matter. That didn't matter too much, which is why I think like the Series 1 is now, I think, the most popular Apple Watch, because, you know, it's got a great price point plus the upgraded processor and stuff like that. But yeah, no, there wasn't much difference. And I was able to resell my old one for, I think I sold it for $150. So,
hey. Wow. The Series 0?
Yep.
Wow. Might have been $100.
I don't remember.
I think that I'm going to probably upgrade when Apple updates the Apple Watch again. I've been perfectly satisfied with my Series 0, but it's so slow. And I think the apps are hard to use because the watch is so slow. It just kind of makes it totally pointless. It's easier just to pull
out my
iPhone.
Apps are still kind of slow. I don't use that many. Honestly, I don't use that many apps. I use mostly the built-in features. So the whole app thing, I think, I can't point to an app on the Apple Watch that I would say is like a killer app. I use Fantastical, so that's pretty good, but that's really just notification stuff, right? So that's more the built-in. Mm-hmm. I don't very often go into that. I also use Spark as my email client, and I can do some Spark email stuff. I have replied to some emails using the voice feature just on my phone.
Oh, yeah? Yeah, how did that work for you?
Great.
Oh, it did? It actually got your voice right and got the sentences correct?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
That is surprising to hear.
I use it for texting, too. On occasion, if my phone just isn't kind of accessible, and you know, I pick it up on the watch. So I like my Apple Watch for all those kinds of reasons. I mean, it's not like replacing my phone or anything yet, but maybe that's coming next, right?
Yeah, we'll see. So rumor has it that Apple's planning to release a new version of the Apple Watch later this year, possibly when the new iPhones come out that will connect directly to cellular networks.
Right.
A move that is designed to reduce the device's reliance on the iPhone, people familiar with the matter said. This is according to a Bloomberg report from our old pal, Mark Gurman, who often gets these kinds of things right.
Right.
And, you know, the first thing that popped into my mind when I read this was, What about the LTE fees that we get charged? Are you willing to pay $10 a month to have your iPhone access your LTE plan?
Well, my guess is it won't be LTE, that it's going to be 3G.
Okay.
And the only reason I say that is because of energy issues to do LTE. But I mean, I've heard that LTE is a possibility. I'm just not sure you would need LTE for the limited amount of data that you need to access on the watch, right? I mean, there's limited data throughput coming in. It's not unless they're planning on streaming movies to your watch, which I guess could be a possibility. But yeah, I don't know. And if it can be rolled up,
watching a movie on your watch, can you imagine?
Yes,
you're on the plane watching a YouTube video.
People seem to want to do it. Isn't that something that's on Android devices? Like you can watch videos and do. I don't know. Apple limits
on the
that
Samsung
stuff, right?
Gear watch. That's why no one's buying those, though. No one actually wants to do any of those things.
Yes.
That's one of the big limiting factors of the watch is the screen is so small that you don't actually want to do anything on it, which I think is why the App Store is basically a huge steaming pile. And I don't know if it will ever be something that people actually use because the screen is so small, it limits the kind of interactions that you have with the device. Really, it's only good for tapping. And your finger, once if you tap on the screen, is like, you know, half the size of the entire screen. So you can't even do anything.
Right.
Any like fine motor stuff on the screen itself. I think it's really interesting. You know, Apple's trying to push this whole App Store model with all their devices, including the Apple TV.
Right.
And these App Stores are really languishing. And I wonder if they're ever going to take off or if people are just going to use them, you know, in a limited fashion, like with what you said, you just use the basic built-in functionality and you actually haven't seen a killer app on the Apple Watch yet. That might be the story for the Apple Watch forever.
I mean, there's a few things. It's about developers getting creative and understanding the platform really well and using it well. So, you know, that's why it gets interesting with this whole cellular capability. We want the Apple Watch to be more autonomous. I think that's mainly for the whole exercise features. I think a lot of people just don't want to have to take their phone with them when they're going out for a run, or maybe they're heading to the gym or something like that, and they'd like to still get text messages and the things that are appropriate for the watch. But, you know, the idea that you're going to be watching movies or that you're going to be, you know, editing Photoshop, you know, photos or something on your Apple
Watch.
You're
going to be using GarageBand.
Insane, right? Because it doesn't make any sense. So, you know, it's bless any developers who have maybe tried to make a photo editing app for the Apple Watch. I don't even know if such a thing exists, but
I hope so.
Really, really, that's not going to go over too well. But I mean, there are really great, you know, potential applications as a secondary screen and stuff like that. I think have been done very well. Or even like, there's been some great creative games. One that I have, I'm going to get the name of it wrong, but it's like I have one app that's a Safecracker game. Uh-huh. And basically, you're trying to, through touch, it uses the Taptic Engine to tell you you're doing a combination dial. So you roll the digital crown and you feel taps, and when you get near the right number, it does a double tap. So you're trying to find the double tap and you try to get the three numbers in under 60 seconds. And that's like the whole little game. So it's a fun little game if you're like waiting in line and you're just trying to kill some time. And it works perfectly on the Apple Watch, but it was designed from the ground up to be an Apple Watch game, right? But, you know, as far as am I going to play Angry Birds on my Apple Watch? No, that makes no sense because it's just too tiny. Like you're saying, I mean, the touch points are going to be way too small. So
we need a version of Final Cut Pro, I think, for the Apple Watch as well, don't you think? The professional users demand it.
You could make, again, if someone got really creative, you could probably do a thing where you could put together, you know, a 15-second clip to on your watch to throw onto Instagram or something like that. You probably could pull something like that off. And you probably could do it well, you know, using the digital crown to maybe set edit points and stuff like that if you really wanted to. But, you know, the question you have to ask yourself is, does anybody need that application and is it worthwhile to build?
Yeah,
right.
That's definitely the number one question you should be asking yourself.
Right.
Did you remember the name of that game? Did I miss it?
I think it's called Break the Safe or something like that.
Break the Safe. I want to try that out, actually.
That's a fun little game.
I was reading about Apple Watch games the other day, and I chortled loudly. But hearing you describe that game, it actually seems like a novel use of the Apple Watch features.
And the other one that everybody loved and was great was Lifeline. That was the text-based one where you would just get little text messages and you were trying to help a stranded astronaut on a planet, and it was more like a interactive push, choose your own adventure kind of game.
That's like what they had in DOS. Remember games in DOS?
Right. Just, yeah.
It was like Dungeons and Dragons. It's like there's a dragon on your right. Would you like to run? Yes or no?
Yeah. And that was a great game because it was all text based. So it would just alert you on your watch. Hey, I see this ship over there. Should I walk toward it, or do you think I should hang out here? You know, and then you'd answer the question, and then certain events would happen, and you'd get text-based notification. And it was a fun game. It was really great.
Really? That is surprising. I got to check some of these out. I never would have imagined even trying to play an Apple Watch game. But these are two. Break the Safe, Lifeline. I'll put these in the show notes if people are interested in them as well. So let's talk about features that we would like to see in the next version of the Apple Watch. I mean, really the marquee feature, and this might be... one of the only ones that we see, it seems like Apple has taken to just doing incremental updates of the Apple Watch. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't be surprised if all we saw in the next version of the Apple Watch was LTE. But any features that you would like to see on the next version?
Not for me personally. I mean, better battery life is always thrown out there, but I think that's something everybody wants. Of course, you want your Apple Watch to last longer. But even there, that has not been an issue with the current versions, you know, because in my mind, I take it off at night, I put it on its little stand, and pick it up in the morning, and it's good to go. And that works out for me. I mean, I've never had a problem with the Apple Watch not lasting all day for battery. So
I haven't either. Yeah. More battery life, of course, that's a given. It would be great to see no LTE fees. Like I said, you said you don't think the Apple Watch is going to have LTE. I think that's a really good point because LTE drains the battery so fast. But let's say they include 3G. As long as they give it to you for free, and or if they say, hey, if you have an Apple or an iPhone connected to AT&T, we're not going to charge you anymore to use your Apple Watch. If they charge any type of fee, even if it's $5 a month, I think that's going to be a huge flop because I don't see most of the people, at least that I know, and I realize this is anecdotal, wanting to pay a fee to use their Apple Watch independent of their iPhone.
Yep, I would agree with that.
I would hate that. I would like to see a new style. We've been doing the whole square thing since the beginning. I would love to see a round version or something different than what we already have, just to kind of mix up the style. I would actually probably prefer a round version, but I don't think Apple's going to do that. I think they're probably going to stick with the shape that they currently have. Yeah. I would love to see an always on screen as well. One of my biggest pet peeves about the Apple Watch has always been the fact that it takes like a fraction of a second to turn the screen on when you angle it towards your face. I don't know if the new Apple Watches are better at this.
Yeah,
than
it's a little bit faster.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah.
Because the Gen Zero are really laggy, and it drives me crazy when you have to like sit there and wait a half second for the screen to come on. It'd be great if they were just always on. I think eventually they probably will be once they're able to eke out some more battery life. And then I want it to be thinner too.
Yeah, thinner would be nice.
Because the new Apple Watches are the same thickness as the Gen Zero, right?
Correct, yeah.
Apple Watch, not
that didn't really
It's
change.
Just kind of chunky, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, and on the shape thing, I'm kind of with you. I mean, round designs are really neat looking. As far as being displays for information, though, they pose a lot of challenges, you know, and so I'm with you there. I'm not sure they're going to get away from the square design. You can kind of maximize the space when you have those corners for some of the complications and stuff like that. I've talked to developers who develop watch apps for both iOS and Android, and you know, some of those round Samsung watches, and is it Samsung, or you know, some of those round designs are a little bit tricky.
Like the Moto X.
Right, yeah. Especially when you're trying to cross develop too, right? Because it's like you design a UI for a square and then, oh wait, the corners are missing. I can't use that part of the screen. So everything kind of has to get crammed into the middle. So
I'd love to see them do a trapezoid just to mess with the developers that are going to come out with the new Apple trapezoid watch. It's like, how are we going to make this work for all the different formats?
I think thinner's right. Yeah, and as far as the always on screen, that would be another great feature. But again, battery is always going to be the concern. And the new ones do. It's like maybe a quarter second or you know a couple tenths of a second delay still. So,
well, let's move on to iPhone 8,
okay.
What I've been calling the iPhone Pro. First question, is it going to be called iPhone 8 or iPhone Pro? I ask everyone this.
I don't know. I'd like iPhone Pro because I think it doesn't add confusion, especially if they're going to do an iPhone 7S Plus thing. I've been referring to it as iPhone 8 just because that seemed to be the easy thing to pick. So,
and that's what everyone's calling it in the press. But I don't think they're going to call it iPhone 8. I think they're going to call it the iPhone Pro as well, just because for the exact same reason that you said, it makes it just easier and cleaner. And then next year, it won't get confusing. But so we had some more rumors that came out this week about the Touch ID sensor. And actually, did you catch this photo?
Yeah, I saw it on your guys' on the Cult-O-Matic. Yeah, yeah.
What did you think about that?
It makes me sick to my stomach.
You're kidding. You don't like it on the back.
No.
Okay, well, let me lay some groundwork here. So an apparent iPhone 8 photo straight out of Foxconn came out this week, and it showed the back of it showed a bunch of iPhones in a box, in a Foxconn box. By the way, this could totally be fake. Like, if you look at, like, the scenery, there's like a trash bag off to the side, and there's like a box that says Foxconn in it filled with iPhones.
Well,
it's a little bit too convenient, if you ask me.
The one thing I noticed on there is that, you know, the frames are in the back. They're basically the back cases, and they're in that typical kind of tray that would go up onto the assembly line. If you've ever seen pictures of iPhones being assembled, they go in these little trays. I need to go compare that to some of those photos that we've seen out of the Foxconn factory. But the one thing I noticed was none of the frames seemed to fit in the little gaps, in the holes where it would sit in the tray. It's like, it's really wide. It's almost like it would be for like a 5.8 inch Samsung phone, or like they put these backs into a tray that seems too big, but that could just be my perception.
So all the phones are sitting face down in the box, and it clearly shows an area for a Touch ID sensor on the back of the phone. And one of the comments I was reading was mentioning that the Touch ID sensors on the back were a little bit off center.
Mm-hmm.
On the phones, and when you look at the photo, it kind of looks like that might be the case, which leads me to believe this photo might be a fake. And I don't know what Apple's going to do, clearly, but Mark Gurman was talking about Face ID recently on new phones, and he said, according to his sources, that Face ID is going to be the new Touch ID, and it's going to be Apple's big pitch for the iPhone Pro come September. And it's supposedly more secure, more accurate than Touch ID, and it will be able to be used for Apple Pay, everything that you would be able to use Touch ID for. And if that's the case, I don't think that we really would need to have Touch ID on the phone, because Face ID could do, you know, everything. But leave it to the comments to bring up interesting perspectives. Somebody was saying, what about people who wear like niqabs, you know, like those things that cover their faces, like those veils?
Right.
Like, they couldn't use Face ID, right? So are those people not going to be able to use iPhones? They would have to include a Touch ID for those people, which I thought was a really fascinating point, because, you know, you only ever think about your own local market. You don't think about how Apple's a global company and has to focus on what other people in other cultures are going to do. But then also the security implications. And I thought this was really interesting. I don't know if this is anything you've ever thought about, Adam, but let's say you get caught for a crime, which, you know, show me the man, I'll show you the crime.
Right.
And the police want to unlock your phone. Well, with Touch ID, they can force you to use your thumb, I guess, if they get like a court order or something.
Right.
But like with the new facial recognition technology that they're going to build in, could they just point the phone at your face and unlock it?
Yeah, I would assume so.
They probably, like, especially if this other feature ends up being or coming to fruition, and this is the rumor that the iPhone 8 will be capable of unlocking itself even if you just put the phone on the table lying flat on your desk.
Right.
A new report from The Information says that, and this corroborates a report published by Bloomberg earlier this year, that the facial recognition sensors, speed and accuracy are focal points of the feature. It can use a user's face and unlock the phone within a few hundred milliseconds. And it's designed to work even if the device is laying flat on a table rather than just close up to the face. So imagine you're walking up to your desk, your phone recognizes your face, it unlocks itself. I'm not actually sure how I feel about that. Oh, the phone's face down? Oh, I don't think
it
would
work.
Is it
going to
work
with both the front and back cameras? Or, you know, like, there's a lot, this leaves a lot of questions. Here's the problem I have with this. And this is why I said that the idea of the Touch ID sensor being on the back makes me sick. The idea of the Touch ID sensor being completely gone makes me sick. so much of Touch ID has been sold to us, especially for things like Apple Pay, that whatever Apple implements, and I guess this is the case that this piece is trying to make, is that it needs to be a lot better than Touch ID is currently. And Touch ID is pretty darn awesome as it works now. You know, it's fast, it's easy to use, it's easy to set up, it's secure, like all of these things. So the facial recognition needs to be better in every way. And you've brought up two scenarios, and the second one I hadn't even thought about, where it maybe isn't, or, you know, the third one of the whole security aspect. Yeah, if a thief steals my phone, then does he just, like, is it going to be automatically unlocked because it saw my face as he was taking it out of my
as
hand?
As long as he points it at your face as he's fleeing. Yeah.
Right. You know what I mean? And this came actually up, you know, I had a listener who had a similar kind of thing happen, you know, where he was socially hacked in a park. You know, this kid came up and said, hey, I forgot my phone. I need to call my mom. Can I use your phone?
Oh, you're kidding.
Right? And so he unlocked it for him so he could dial the number. And the kid ran off and threw it over a wall to his buddies who were waiting on the other side. And they took off with his phone.
Wow. But you know what? That wouldn't even do it. Those kids can't even do anything with that phone because you need the passcode.
Right. It's activation locked. Yeah. And that was the whole separate conversation we had. But, you know, you get the point here is if somebody wanted to maybe just steal a phone to get at identity data or something like that, they potentially have access to that, you know. So it, you know, again, it's going to have to be better in some way than Touch ID is, and I'm not convinced that it is. Like, so I'm it's gonna be interesting to see if this is the way it goes. Apple's really gonna have to sell this on stage at the keynote as being a better technology.
Just those two security implications alone make me think that they may never be able to get away from Touch ID.
Well,
if only because Touch ID takes an intentional action, right, to authenticate.
Right.
Whereas Face ID is something that could happen without you intending for it to happen.
Right.
And so it makes it less secure inherently.
Well, and two, I'm assuming the facial recognition is not going to work when my iPhone's in my pocket. And so, like, with Apple Pay, a thing that I will often do if my phone's in my pocket is as I'm pulling it out of my pocket, I'm putting my thumb on the Touch ID sensor. So the minute I get it to the reader, it's already unlocked and ready to go. Right.
Wow.
So even if it works quickly and at odd angles, is there still going to be a delay? Is it going to work reliably every single time? If I'm going from my pocket straight to the reader, which is on the counter, and some of those readers sometimes are at an angle, so I might hold my phone sideways. You know, it leaves a lot of questions in my mind. And so I just can't imagine that it's going to be better than what we already have, which is great. So
I think perfect world, we get both.
Yeah.
Because the facial ID clearly is a huge convenience feature.
Yeah, and you can use it for less secure.
It's kind of a magic wow feature. But yeah, without having both, I just don't see how Apple could do it.
Yeah, and it can be a secondary check. So like I have some apps that use a passcode, you know, a simple 4-digit passcode now as an extra check, you know, once the phone is unlocked, or maybe, you know, for unlocking secure notes in the Notes app. So you unlock the whole device with Touch ID, and then accessing maybe bits of information could use the facial thing. That could work out really well. So, you know, some sort of combination would I think be good.
I also wonder if, like, I stole Tim Cook's phone and then went to, like, a Madame Tussauds wax museum. Could I unlock his phone with his wax figure?
I don't think it would be accurate. And that's the other thing to bring up, is that what Apple is implementing, as far as we know, with the facial ID stuff, is full, like, 3D facial recognition, not the stuff like Samsung put out, I think, on a phone recently that was 2D and was easily spoofed by, like, a photograph. So
can you believe that? That's so hilarious.
Yeah, but again, they pointed out this is a secondary measure. It's not meant to be the main security. They were still using, you know, fingerprint scanners for the main authentication. So
yeah, well, I hope that they do both, because as you said, it's just so easy to unlock your phone with Touch ID. And I like the placement of it on the back. I think maybe even more than I like it on the front, especially when you're reaching down into your pocket, your index finger naturally touches the area on the phone where the Touch ID would.
Yeah.
Why are you against this? You clearly are not a fan of Touch ID on the back.
Yeah, I guess I could get used to it. It's just, again, I have my behaviors. It's more of a, like, I don't want to have to change how I do things now.
Okay.
And two,
gotcha.
I guess I would just, like, right now I typically register my thumb, my index finger, and my middle finger. So I guess I'd just change it to ring, middle, and you know, index if it was on the back. I guess I'd get used to it, but I don't know. It kind of messes up the style of the phone though too. Just having that hole under the Apple logo looks lame to me, and especially if what the goal was to like eliminate any openings altogether, right? With the front, with it being embedded under the front glass. So there's a stylistic thing, but again, I'll get over that. I'd rather have that than no touch ID and only the facial stuff. But again, maybe Apple will sell me. Maybe they can convince me with their, you know, their reality distortion field.
Yeah, well, yeah. If anyone can do it, Tim Cook can. The other thing I was thinking, last point before we move on, is with cases, thick cases especially,
right?
You're going to have a giant hole in the back where you're going to have to jam your finger in there and somehow touch the touch ID sensor.
Yep.
I don't see that working very well.
Well, it works on Android phones. So, you know, and then the other part of it is we're going to have to deal with the whole the whole Android fanboy thing, seeing, you know, saying we're Apple's copying Android.
Oh, dude.
I'm saying Android, yeah. But I mean, you know, like not Android devices.
Yeah, yeah, I know exactly what you mean. They all hang out in the Cult of Mac comments thread telling us how much we suck and how all these features existed on Android forever. And I'm like, yeah, well, those phones have existed on Android forever, but
you
the
know
Android
there
phones
will be,
still suck.
There will be the piece on, you know, insert Android site here that says, oh, see, here's Apple admitting that Touch ID on the front was a failure and it should have been on the back since the beginning because that's the right way to do it.
That's really funny. That reminds me of a tweet that I saw that Steve Ballmer was saying Apple finally surrendered to the Zune. Zune had finally taken over because they were retiring those two iPods, and it showed that right. Zune was clearly superior. Like, it's going to be that scenario.
Yeah, exactly. Sure. You got it.
Okay, well, let me see here. Oh, you know what? Before we continue, let me just give a quick plug for Cult Cloth. If you haven't tried out Cult Cloth, they are, in my opinion, the best way to keep your Macs sparkling clean, your iPhone sparkling clean, your iPad sparkling clean, and especially like your keyboards and stuff. Do you have a gnarly, greasy, grimy keyboard? I hate that. Isn't it gross? I can't stand typing on those. I like to keep all of my technology. I bet yours looks terrible right now.
You're making me look at mine right now. But I have a Cult Cloth in my bag over here.
Oh, so. That's right. You do have some.
I do.
That's
I love right. them. You do have some. I love that, especially the terry cloth ones are my go-to cloth of choice.
Same here, especially for nasty, grimy keyboards. And if you are somebody that doesn't like to have your technology be gross, if you don't like earwax and face grease all over your iPhone.
Oh, man.
These things are the way to go. I got samples from all over the world because I used to use these little like paper terry cloths to like clean my gadgets, and finally I got tired of purchasing those. So I got cloth samples from all over the world. I found some manufacturers that made some outstanding products, and I liked them so much that I decided to start selling them. And I've got nothing but positive feedback on Cult Cloth, and we have a 60-day return policy. If you don't like them for any reason, you can send them back and we'll refund your money. Because honestly, if you don't like them, I would rather you get your money back and be happy than keep them and be mad at me and be like, Airfon's a shyster, he's trying to just keep my money. I would rather have your trust than your money. Quite honestly, I mean that. So if you have any problem with them, you can get your money back within 60 days. So if you want to check some out, head on over to cultcloth.co, cultcloth.co. And right now we are doing a sale. It just started for a limited time. You can get 20% off your order, plus a free 8x8 clean cloth with any order. It's the best sale that we've ever done. And I'm not sure how long we'll do it. So you're going to want to take advantage of the deal soon if you think you're going to want to buy some. It's cultcloth.co, and the code to use at checkout is cultcast20. Cultcast20. That should be pretty easy to remember. Yeah, cultcast20.
Yep.
Okay, let's talk about 4K. Oh, man, I've been jonesing for a 4K television, but there's never been a reason to actually get one. Do you have a 4K TV?
Absolutely not.
Are you going to get a 4K TV?
Absolutely when not. Apple?
You don't think so? Nope. Come on, man. Well, why not?
I watch almost all my content on my iPad.
Yeah. Oh, but what about when you take all these beautiful 4K videos of your kids and you finally are able to watch the content that you've been recording in 4K, in 4K. Imagine that.
Yep. Watch it on my iPad. No.
You watch all your content on your iPad? Really?
Pretty much.
Oh, don't you watch shows with like your kids?
I do.
And your
we
wife?
Do watch some movies on my TV, but again, there's two problems I have with 4K. One, I don't want to spend $1,500 on a new television set.
Yeah.
I don't.
But they're coming down so fast.
Okay,
soon you'll be able to get one for $1,000.
New television.
You don't even want to. Okay, you don't want to spend any hundred of dollars on a new TV.
You know, I look at that $500. It's like I'd rather have a new Apple Watch. I think. That's just me, though. You know, again, because a large percentage of my content these days, and I think I'm not in that big of a minority, especially among tech people. You know, geeks, is that a lot of the content I watch, I'm watching on my iPad. I mean, I really am.
Wow.
You know, when we sit down with the family, we do watch a movie or two.
Just in front of the iPad?
No.
Everyone gather around the iPad. Come on, Dad,
room,
I can't see.
Just in 1080p HD, I know, like a Neanderthal. But
well, you know what's crazy is the market is so fragmented now. And I know that manufacturers are always trying to push the next big thing. And 4K is it right now. It used to be 3D, which sucked and never took off. And now, rest in peace, no one cares about anymore. But now 4K is the big thing, and they're starting to release movies in 4K. And I think, for me, the big push is going to be the 4K Apple television.
Sure.
And over the last few weeks, many of you know, this HomePod software leak has just been a treasure trove of details on all these devices that Apple is going to be releasing. And internet sleuth Steve Stratton Smith. Oh no, this was I take that back. This is Guillerme Rambo. Is that his real name?
I don't know, but that's
I
a
wish
great
my
name.
Last name was Rambo.
Guillerme
oh my
Rambo.
God. Yeah, this guy doesn't want to be in doing iOS development anymore. He could be in the movies. He discovered in the HomePod software references to both Dolby Vision,
right,
HDR10 color formats, and 4K video support. So right, this is clearly on the way.
Well, this backs up the content thing a little bit too, right? The content, I don't know if you guys covered the content leak that happened over in the UK, the
no.
format leak. So there were a couple people over in the UK who purchased movie content through iTunes. And when they went into their iTunes account to look at their order receipt history under video format, it said 4K, HDR,
oopsie.
Even though what was downloaded was a 1080p video file, but the receipt was sort of indicating like somebody had messed up and flipped a bit switch too early. Because obviously, if you're going to have a 4K Apple TV, iTunes content needs to be delivered in 4K, you know, to go along
exactly.
with it. So 4K
right.
HDR.
Right. And right now there's just no 4K content at all. Well, there's very
Netflix
little out
has
there.
Some, right?
They have some, but and the other interesting thing is going to be just the whole bandwidth cap thing that all these ISPs are
that
trying to push.
That was the
now.
Other thing. That was the second item I was going to bring up, because I've already run up against that in my house. We stream a lot of stuff between there's four of us in here, and we all stream movies and content from Netflix and Amazon Prime, and what hit us was just when Netflix automatically overnight changed from sending out SD to HD streams. Mm-hmm. You know, so this was mm-hmm. a couple years ago. We immediately hit that cap, and I'm getting nasty letters from my cable company being like, we're gonna shut you off if you continue to like use all this. You know, I think we were at 300 gigabytes a month. And we had hit that, and
which is nothing in today's day and age.
That's, I mean, it's still a lot, but I mean, again, we stream a lot of content, and it was just that switch. So I was able to mitigate it by going into my Netflix settings and saying, no, it's okay that we just watch SD again, because a lot of us are watching on iPads. You know, it's like at night you're sitting down to go to sleep, and you want to watch a movie or a TV show or something like that. So.
Yeah, I back up to the cloud. I have an Arlo Pro, which I reviewed on the show last week, which I love, which is constantly uploading stuff to the cloud.
Yep, me too.
I use Netflix. We have Amazon. I am streaming Plex over the network when I'm not here. 300 gigabytes to me is unfathomable.
Well, and I think it's been increased. Like again, this was a couple years ago, and I think the ISPs are catching on that people are doing these things, and they're upping those limits, but a lot of people still don't realize there's a limit. And the minute that everything is coming down in 4K. I mean, yeah. The file sizes are they're exponentially bigger. It's not just like you're doing a 4X jump, basically, I think is how the math works. I'm not very good at that stuff.
I believe it is four times the resolution. I think you're right. And the file sizes are enormous.
Right.
I mean, way bigger than 1080p files.
Right.
And so that's going to be a big issue. But you'll be able to watch, and this is something that I've wanted to do ever since I had 4K recording on the iPhone, mm-hmm. is watch that content in 4K.
Yep.
That's going to be amazing. And unlike you, I don't watch anything on my iPad. My iPad is basically a Reddit machine. It's just what I read.
I do have an iPad Pro, so it's a pretty big screen.
Oh, so you have a nicer 12.9,
model than I do. Yeah.
Oh, wow. You got the big boy.
Yeah.
Holy moly. But, okay, well, watching movies on your iPad makes more sense than mine. But still, I like to sit in front of a TV. There's just something about that TV experience, and I know we have lots of people listening who agree with me. There's just something about being in front of that larger screen that I love.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
And I have been forcing myself to not purchase a 4K television for the longest time because OLED televisions now have gotten to a point where they're finally better than the plasma that was, you know, being sold five, 6 years ago, which I still have, and my plasma television is still nicer than pretty much any LCD on the market. But these OLED 4K televisions now, especially the ones from LG,
yep.
are just monsters.
But what's
monsters.
A 50-inch OLED cost?
Yeah, it's not cheap. It's speaking of not wanting to spend $1,000, I mean, the 55-inch OLED from LG, if you get a great deal on it, $1,300.
Yeah.
But I want the 65, dude.
Right.
I want to go with the big boy, the 65. That thing is $2,400.
Yeah. Yep.
So it's not
like,
cheap.
Do you want a new iMac or do you want a TV?
Well, I do want a new MacBook Pro, but Apple, it seems like they're not going to release anything that I actually want to purchase. So there's my MacBook Pro money. Little side tangent here, so I haven't talked to you in a while. How do you feel about the new MacBook Pros?
Oh,
and the Touch Bar.
I would have had one. Unfortunately, it would have been the first gen one, but I had a whole scenario. It's too long to go into, but basically I ended up with a 2015 top of the line model right two weeks before they were announced. So I had money budgeted to buy one. I was planning on buying one because I had a 2011 that I was currently rocking. So
did it die?
Yeah, it had the logic board failure for like the short answer is it had logic board failure for the fourth time.
Yeah.
They were going to replace it under the warranty. And I said, you know, I'm not convinced this is going to last. What can you do for me? And they said, well, we'll let you purchase anything in the store right now for half off.
Whoa.
So, yeah.
Genius bar jackpot. That's what we call that.
So I took them up on that offer, but they wouldn't give me a rain check. I said, can I come back in 2 weeks and get the same deal? And they're like, no, you have to take it now.
Oh, man. Because you knew, clearly. They're going to be coming out with new stuff. Oh, geez.
But yeah, so I got a great deal on the top of the line, you know, 2015 Retina MacBook Pro model. You know,
I'd be happy with
$1,800 out the door with fully loaded.
I've actually thought about getting a 2015 too, just because I don't want to buy.
You don't like the Touch Bar?
Dongles.
Is that the thing?
It's not that I don't like the Touch Bar. The Touch Bar seems like it's fine. I don't really. I haven't spent enough time with it to really have a solid opinion on it. I just don't know if it's going to be as useful as the price would indicate it will be.
Right.
And then also the ports. Yeah, the ports to me are a big deal. The fact that they got rid of the SD card slot, they got rid of MagSafe, they got rid of USB-A. I mean, they just got rid of all the stuff that I use. None of that bothers you?
No, I'm ready for USB-C all the way.
You're a man of the future.
Yeah.
And I'm a Luddite.
I like one cable. I've got four cables hanging out the back now. I'd do the one cable dock thing in a heartbeat.
Okay, well, that's really the best solution. If you're gonna get a new Mac, I mean, getting a dock would be the way to go, and that way it's a lot cleaner. But can I make it an admission to you?
Uh-huh.
I'm actually somewhat embarrassed to say I'm still using FireWire 800 hard drives.
Sure,
because they still work.
I had some
right?
of those recently,
and I've got a FireWire 800 compact flash card reader that works really well. And so I'm looking around at all these accessories, and I'm like, cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching. Here's all the things I'm going to have to replace.
Again, you get a dock, and I think it solves most of those problems.
But the new docks don't have FireWire 800.
None of them do?
Well, maybe a couple of them do, but most of the popular ones don't. It's FireWire 800. Why would you put that in your dock? I mean, it's
because it's for a port of the past. Like you, there is there are, especially on the pro levels. I think there are pro. I've talked to a lot of pros, and they still have a lot of those. You know, like photographers and video people. You have those things because that's what you invested in, and
they
why
were the
have
fastest.
To throw it away.
Before USB 3, that was the fastest connection that you get, unless you wanted
so
to invest in
Thunderbolt.
You're going
to spend some cash on some adapters, and you're never going to disconnect the adapter, so you're good to go. You know, it's like
I hate the dongles, man. I hate them. Okay, let's see here. Let's talk about some AR kit stuff. Let's just run through this real fast.
Yep.
You said before we formally started the show, you're excited for AR kit. I am super excited for AR kit. Yeah. Was that enthusiastic enough?
I think it's the biggest technology advance that Apple has put out in the last, arguably the last 5 years, but definitely probably the last 3 years, in my opinion.
So what excites you about it?
The most game-changing thing that they've done. The most exciting thing for me about it is it opens up augmented reality to developers in a way where they don't have to worry or think about the underlying technology. Like, they don't have to build plane mapping systems and all the vision stuff and all. They can focus on the application of the technology. And that's why I'm convinced that's why we're seeing all these incredible demos, right? Is because now you freed up the creative aspects of their brains, and they can go, okay, I don't have to deal with the underlying technology. I can just use it. How do I want to use it? Mm-hmm. And I think it's just going to be an explosion. And I think Apple's leaps and bounds ahead of the competition because they have full control over the hardware. And this, like, they can make sure that technology side of things, developers aren't going to hassle with. It's just going to work. It's just like, here's the APIs. Here's how you do it. Now just go make cool stuff, you know? That's what's going to be incredible about it. And we're already seeing the benefits in just little demos. Like, the demos are blowing me away. So it's like, when we get actual applications that are doing things, it's going to be exponentially more amazing.
Yeah, they are overnight going to make AR kit mainstream.
Yep.
And, or I should say AR.
AR, yeah.
Augmented reality mainstream. And same with me. I mean, just the demos, and we've been covering these here and there on the show, but the demos we continue to see are amazing. They're doing incredible stuff, and this is such early days. The fact that they're able to crank out some of these demos and do this, you know, and it's only been, what, several months since they've been able to play out with ARKit is really blowing my mind.
Did you see the Portals one today? I'll send you a link if you haven't seen
it. Is that a new one?
Yeah, I saw a new one today. That's it's very similar to the first one that you're going to talk about.
Yeah.
Where you kind of create a virtual space inside a real space with a door or a portal that you walk through. But in this demo, it was the first one I've seen where it's set up like a game, so it's interactive. So there's a door there. You walk up to the door, and, you know, it's in real world space. There's a plane. There's a door. You try to, but you can actually interact with it. So there's a little dot cursor on the screen where you can touch the handle on the door and it says, oh, it's locked. You need to find the key. And then in augmented reality, you got to look around the space, find the key, pick up the key, open the door, and then you can walk into the portal. And then inside there, you grab another object, and that allows you to go back out into the real world. And then there's more portals that open up. So it's almost set up total game.
Just imagine if you could do, so just fast forward 5 years, new movie comes out. They release a new AR experience for like the movie to let you explore the landscape of or an experience the cinematics of that movie in augmented space.
Right.
That would be incredible. There's going to be amazing games, I think.
Yep. The only problem with this demo is, you know, that you're going to run into a pole or a trash can.
I was just going to say, you're going to get hit by a bus. Bus right. Collisions
if
with humans.
If we thought Pokemon was bad with people falling off cliffs, AR kit is going to be like, there's going to be serious deaths.
Yeah, there are. I have no doubt. We laugh about it, but I have no doubt that that's true. Especially once Apple releases its augmented reality glasses and people can have these experiences on their face.
Yeah.
I mean, people are definitely going to be hit by buses. But you'll be having a great time before the impact. So one of these demos that popped up recently that I thought was really amazing was, have you seen the music video for Aha, Take On Me?
Yep, that was awesome.
Adam, if you want to sing the whole song for people so that it jogs their memories, that would be totally fine. And the music video was recreated in AR kit And so the guy steps inside like that Take On Me world, and the music's playing in the background, and there's the portal looking back into the normal world.
Yeah, it's like the whole world turned into a pencil sketch, right?
Was it a pencil sketch?
Yeah, it kind of looks like a hand-drawn pencil sketch, like white with gray charcoal kind of view of the world.
I never made that connection. It just looked like 80s writing to me. I don't know if that's a genre of writing.
I always got the idea that it was supposed to kind of be like that, but yeah.
You're probably right. That's probably what it's supposed to be. So I'll include a link to that. As far as things that maybe aren't just whimsical, but are actually useful, we keep seeing measuring functionality in AR kits.
And this one, amazing.
This demo where the guy was measuring his whole room, he was just pointing his iPhone along the line of the floor, like where it met the edges of the room.
Corners,
and he was just, able to. Was it just the corners?
Well, not just like every edge, right? So point to point, but you know, from the corner of this wall to corner of that wall, and even like where it might jut out, you know, where you have a half wall and an opening or something, you're able to go around those points. So he's just following the floor line, like point to point around. But so in getting incredibly accurate, whereas, you know, if you did it with tape measure, you might just go across the one point, right? And kind of guesstimate it. So
this would be overnight. This would be the easiest way to measure the square feet of any room.
Yep.
I mean, just like that, this would be the new way to do it. It wouldn't be easier than this. And then the last example I saw that seemed like it would actually be useful in real life was the virtual directions.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure you saw this video where the guy had a maps app up and the arrows were showing him on the sidewalk where he needed to go.
Yep.
And then also he was pointing the phone up and pointing it around the city, and it was showing like those little meta tags above the different landmarks.
Yep.
On the iPhones, like if you were traveling and you wanted to know where to go in like another country or another city, this would be extremely useful.
Yeah.
And if you're like jonesing for a hot dog and you need to find one right away, you could find those really easily within the Maps app.
Yeah, the points of interest being marked out and stuff like that. Absolutely.
And these are just more examples of the kinds of incredible apps we're going to see once.
Think of you're walking around an area, a landmark area, or something like that, and just being able to have information displays come up. So, you know, rather than you might have little plaques and things like that, but you could walk up and get other information overlays, videos, you know, additional images, all that stuff in location. I mean, there's just so many applications for this technology, and it's never been realized. We've kind of seen it before, but I think really where the revolution comes into play and why we haven't seen much more with augmented reality, because like Yelp had a kind of a view, I think, with augmented reality stuff, and it's been played around with, but I think it's because implementing it is so difficult from a technology standpoint that it wasn't worth the time and investment. And I think now that Apple has built this and taken that out of the equation, mm-hmm. you know, that's why we're just going to see this is really going to be where the revolution comes into play. And I think that's why Tim Cook has been talking about it for a year now, how excited mm-hmm. Apple is about AR. And I should have believed him. I didn't really kind of get it till they showed this at Worldwide Developer Conference. And it's like, oh, yeah, this is huge. This is really huge.
The first time I saw AR, a practical demo of AR that got me excited was when Microsoft demonstrated the HoloLens.
Yep.
And my mind was blown. Seeing that Minecraft demo in 3D space in the real world mixed with AR elements, I was like, this is amazing. This is amazing. This is going to completely change gaming and has all these other useful applications. And, you know, Microsoft has been trying to perfect this. It's interesting to see Apple come along and be like, oh, we're just going to go ahead and make this ubiquitous overnight.
That's the thing, is the ubiquity, right? Because this technology works on the devices that are already out there. And it's only going to get better with new devices, obviously, you know, with the new iPhones and things like that. But, I mean, that's the other point I keep trying to stress with people, is this works with, I think, everything from is it 6S up or 6...
I think that is right.
Yeah, I can't remember what the cutoff is. But, I mean, you're talking millions of devices on day one that are going to be able to leverage this. And that's another thing for developers. Whereas, you know, HoloLens, as awesome as it is, and I totally agree with you, that was the first time I saw it and kind of went, okay, yeah, that's really amazing. It's a limited scope, right? And it's expensive.
Right.
So,
in fact, they haven't even announced the pricing for HoloLens.
Right.
It's not even for sale yet, as far as I know. They're still trying to figure it out. And... as you pointed out, the draw for developers is going to be this massive market of people who are ready to start throwing money at software that does cool stuff in ARKit.
Yep.
I mean, there's like an instant market that Apple is going to create. So there's going to be a huge motivation for these developers to start coming out with creative apps for us all to enjoy. Okay, well, if you're interested in any of the examples we talked about, they'll, of course, be in the show notes. I would recommend you check them out. This stuff is super exciting, and it's hard to describe once you see it in action. I think it's a lot cooler to be enthusiastic about it. Let's go ahead and wrap up with an all-new What We're Into. I know we're kind of running low on time here, Adam. So, Adam, why don't you go first?
Okay. I promised I would do a show... and I'll do that, and I want to do one other thing. So real quick, this show, have you seen Halt and Catch Fire? It's an AMC show.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
Oh, you need to check this out. So this is totally anybody who's into late 70s, 80s kind of stuff. That's the time period it's set in, and into, you know, technology nerd stuff. So I think there's 3 seasons available. I believe it's on Netflix. Now I should check that, but it's a show that originally aired on AMC, and each season kind of deals with a different era of technology. The first season, I'll just give you the first season, it is all about IBM PC clones, and there's a company that's trying to make a portable computer. And it's just the whole story of the people who are developing that, and it's kind of a drama series, and it's got amazing character development. And if you're into, you know, x86 chips and all the Altair and all that stuff that was going on at the birth of the computer revolution, it's kind of a show about that.
It's fiction?
Yeah, it's all fiction.
Oh, is it based on true stories?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot borrowed from a lot of those stories from those early days. But, you know, it's okay. Not Mac focused. It's definitely IBM PC. And that's just the first season. And then, like, the second season, they're trying to do, like, BBS and create, like, online communities. And then the third season, I think, is about the formation of the internet and e-commerce and, you know, all those sorts of things. So it's the evolution of this one company, this sort of startup company, you know, a group of people trying to start things up and get things going at that period of time. And it's just an amazing series. It's really well done and
it's
just
unbelievable
entertaining
to me. Every time we have a discussion about shows, people bring up shows that I have literally never even heard of, and this is one of them. There are just so many shows out there now that it's hard to even keep track of what's new anymore. So here's one, Halt and Catch Fire, one that I'll be checking out.
Yeah,
okay, got
yeah.
it.
And then the other thing real quick is I'm really into board games. I don't know if anybody else is there is a board game geek. And I just came across this game at a conference that I went to. It's called Mintworks. Mm-hmm. It's going to be kind of tricky to get into, but it's what's called a work replacement game. So the idea is you kind of have a set of cards. The concept of this one is you're trying to build like a little, each person's trying to build a little city, and you're given a certain amount of cash in the form of, in this case, it's little mints, like think Altoids, like little wood chips. Mm-hmm. And each round you're trying to buy and build buildings and sort of build your city and earn the most points and to win the game. But what's amazing about this game is that it all fits into an Altoid tin sized thing. So it's something you can carry around in your pocket. It's got a lot of great strategy. It has a solitaire version. And it's a really fun little game that I came across. And I think it was originally a Kickstarter project. Mm-hmm, So I thought the URL was on here. But it's called Mintworks. It's by 524 Labs, FIVE, and then 24labs.com is where you can find it.
Oh man, Adam, I ate one of your mints, man. My stomach hurts. I think they're stale.
Well, it's funny because I have a friend who he got sent one of these, and his wife almost did eat one. But they do look like little mints. But it's got a great design, and again, what's great about it is it's something you can throw in a pocket or bag, and you know, if you're out with friends and want to play a quick little game. And the game, it's pretty simple gameplay. Each game is like 15-20 minutes long. So
got it. Okay. Halt and Catch Fire, Mint Work game.
Mintworks, yeah.
Mintworks, the game. Okay, so you know what? I'll pitch a game too. I got a movie and a game. My game is not new, but it's fairly new to me, and I have been loving it. Have you ever played Dominion?
Oh yeah, I got that for Father's Day.
My kids gave that to me for Father's Day.
It is awesome.
How do you like it?
Yeah, that's a deck building game. It's fabulous. We love it.
I'm not very experienced with games, so I'm not very good at describing them. But I will say this: Dominion is probably the most fun game I've played. I played a lot of different games. I'm not normally a gamer type person, but Dominion really captured me. And it's extremely fun. It's easy to hop in, easy to hop out. And they have a bunch of great expansions. So we've been playing some of the expansions.
Oh, I don't have any of those yet.
Oh, you don't? Oh, man, the expansions add a lot. They add a lot to the game. Because, you know, like you play through the regular game, and once you've played it enough, you kind of develop your favorite cards, and you have certain strategies that you'll use every single game. And once you start introducing the expansions, it completely changes the dynamic of the gameplay and adds a lot of life to the fun. So if you've never played Dominion, that would be my pick for a game. It's pretty popular, so you've probably already heard of it.
Yeah, and unfortunately, they had it as a they had it as an iOS app too.
Oh, really?
But they killed it. The company got bought out or changed it, and they killed it off. So I went to open it the other day, and it's like, oh, it doesn't work anymore. Wow.
Oh, did you pay for it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And they just stopped supporting it.
Yeah.
That's a bummer.
They went a different direction. But board game. It's better than the iOS game anyway.
Yeah, I would imagine it would be, just because the way the game is played, and it's fun to play with other people. So my original pick is going to be a movie. Have you heard of Alien Covenant?
I have not.
Okay. Are you an Aliens movie franchise
fan? Oh, is this another one of the Aliens
movies?
Yeah. I think I have heard of it, but I haven't seen it. So yeah.
Aliens movies are either great or they're terrible. I mean, I'm a huge fan of the Aliens franchise, if only because a lot of space movies, it's a sci-fi series, right? And a lot of space movies portray humans as this evolved species that have this amazing ability to build these hyper-futuristic spaceships, like, you know, Star Trek. They have like the holo deck and they have teleporters and stuff.
Right.
I think the Aliens franchise is more accurate. It's an interpretation of what being in space would actually be like, where it's like, it's just a piece of crap floating. It's like a garbage truck floating in space, right? Like, if we make it to space, that's actually what it's going to be like. You're going to be on this dump of a ship surrounded by a bunch of a-holes, and it's going to suck.
And, by space, you mean space outside our own galaxy, right? Because we have it, at least as far as I know, made it to space.
Wait a second. People have made it out into space already. So I love the franchise for that reason. Well, there's been some great movies in the series, and there's been some terrible movies in the series, specifically like Aliens 3 and 4, which just didn't have the same wow factor as the first two movies. Well, they've kind of branched out into this other story arc. And the first movie in the story arc was Prometheus, which was loosely affiliated with the Aliens franchise. I really loved it. I think I pitched it on a previous show. I know a lot of people didn't like it. It was kind of hit or miss.
Mm-hmm.
I loved that movie, and I watched it probably like 20 or 30 times. They came out with a sequel to that movie in the last, I think, 5 months called Alien Covenant, and it starts where Prometheus ended, and that movie ended with a huge question mark. And I was captivated by that movie. And I was wondering what was going to happen after it was finished, because they kind of left this huge open-ended question. Well, I found out they were going to make another one, and they made this sequel. And the sequel was almost everything I hoped it would be. It was eerie and strange and ethereal and beautiful and frightening and full of the same wonder that Prometheus had. It didn't get the greatest reviews. Some people, there's a lot of plot holes. There's a lot of plot holes,
okay.
And it's not a perfect movie by any means. But if you like space movies and you like horror movies, because this has some horror elements to it.
That was that was where my question was going to come in.
What was that?
So I'm not an Aliens fan only because I am not a horror film fan, and they all have a little bit too much of the horror element for my liking.
I would actually agree with you there. That was one of the things that I don't like about the Aliens movies either. And that's what I loved about Prometheus. I thought it was going to be more of a horror movie. I don't know if horror is the right word. A violent sci-fi movie maybe describes it a little bit better.
I don't mind that so much either. I can get through that stuff. Like the other genre that falls in this category is all the zombie movies.
Yeah.
And space zombie movies, or like, or I have not watched any of the Resident Evil stuff because I just know I'm not, it's going to freak me out.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Or like the Hostel movies, or like Saw or stuff.
Well,
like,
that gets in a whole, that's a whole deeper genre of what I don't call like torture films that
torture
I cannot
porn. Yeah, handle. Me either. No thanks. No thanks.
But I can handle some of the space stuff. I've watched Aliens, the first three Aliens movies, and I'm kind of okay with it, but it's just not my favorite genre. That's all.
So it's not really for me either. I like more of the sci-fi stuff and the exploring space part of the sci-fi genre. I don't like it when it gets super violent. And Prometheus for me was, I really enjoyed it because I thought it was going to be really violent. And then I watched it and I was like, oh, this isn't violent at all. It's just people exploring space, right, which I love. And I would say that Alien Covenant is more of a mix between Prometheus and its nonviolent style and the original Alien. It has a mixture of both, and there are some graphically violent scenes in Alien Covenant, but ever since I saw it in movie theaters, I've been thinking about it every week. I mean, I can't get it out of my mind. It just there's just certain aspects about the plot that I can't stop thinking about, and I'm excited to watch again. And since it's coming out on Blu-ray, this is a good time, if you haven't seen it, to go check it out. I'm sure it will be like available on Redbox and stuff. So those are my picks, Dominion and then Alien Covenant.
Cool.
And I recommend people go check them out this weekend if you find yourself dateless and bored on a Friday or Saturday night. All right, Adam, I think that's it. We should go ahead and wrap it up there. You need to go in like 3 minutes, right?
Yep.
Boom, look at that. Okay, so that's all the cult cast we have for you guys this week. If you want to come say hi or talk about any of the things that we mentioned on today's show, we are on Twitter. I'm at Erfon, E-R-F-O-N. Adam is at MattCast, M-A-C-C-A-S-T.
Yep.
And you can, of course, check out the MattCast podcast on iTunes. And what other podcasts are you doing, Adam?
I also do the Mac Show, which you can find on BritishTechNetwork.com, and the iOS Show at theiosshow.com.
Good grief, man. Showing me up. I'm only doing one podcast. I feel like a lazy guy now. Well, this has been the Cultcast, the best 30-plus minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. New episodes of the Cultcast come out every Thursday night. Want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll see you guys next time. Boom.
Cool, man.
Well, I'll just be referring to you as guest 41 for the remainder of the show. 1, 2, 3 Man, it's great to have you on. You got the whole setup. Your internet's good. You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
Some of the people you talk to, their mic sucks. Their internet is DSL, and you're just like struggling just to get the audio out.
Yep.
Okay.
I know what you're talking about.
All right. So if you've got your recording going,
I haven't started yet.
Oh.
I should have started before we clapped.
Probably. Yeah.
You want to do that again? Sorry.
Okay, that's okay. I retract everything I just said about you.
That would have made sense.
You've disappointed me horribly.
I had tested it when we were talking earlier to make sure I was only capturing my audio. But okay, let's do this again.
I love that this is after like 5 seconds of flattery. Ready? Here we go. 1, 2, 3.